despair and agony on me. Deep dark depression, excessive misery. If it weren't for bad luck, I'd have no luck at all. Gloom, despair and agony on me.
We figured she was rich, loaded to the hilt.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now from Prague in the Czech Republic is James Galbraith, who is a professor at the Lyndon B. Johnson School of Public Policy at the University of Texas in Austin. He's also a senior scholar of the Levy Economics Institute and serves as chair of the Board of Economists for Peace and Security. His books include Balancing Act, Technology, Finance, and the American Future, Created Unequal, The Crisis in American Play, and The Predator State. And his latest book is Inequality and Instability. Welcome to Background Briefing, James Galbraith.
Nice to be with you.
And you're in. I learned a new word today, James, Eurogloom. Would you say that that's an appropriate word for the moment?
Well, there is a fair amount of it around, yes.
And what's your sense of whether, I mean, I've been discussing this for 2.5 years, asking the same question over and over again, when will the Europeans get their hands around this continuing debt problem? The longer they dither, the worse the situation gets. And it just seems to, the same question keeps arising.
Well, I think it's fair to say that the European leadership does not have a comprehensive plan and cannot really come up with one under the political constraints faced by the leaders, particularly in Germany. So we're looking at a situation in which the major action right now is in the hands of ordinary people who are trying to protect themselves as best they can from what they fear will become an uncontrolled situation.
But that suggests, does it not, that people left to their own devices will create a run on the euro. The Greeks will cash their Greek euros in for German euros or English pounds, etc.
The Greek banking system has already lost a fair fraction of its deposits. And I was having a conversation at lunch today with a professional who follows these things from here, who says that they're driving to the nearest point in the eurozone where they can open accounts, and that's in southern Austria. So there's a physical movement of cash, which has an interesting consequence. Then it means that if Greece does exit, that cash will be buffered. It will be the euro will, of course, survive, and those who have taken their money out would be in a very strong position to go back in with solid assets that would be worth a great deal more than they were when they moved them out. So it's a classic, and it's sort of a poor man's speculative move against the home currency. And you've got to expect that is also happening at the level of more high-powered investors.
And clearly happening in Spain, and I don't know whether they're driving to the French border or not, but the benchmark 10-year bond yield in Spain hit 6.81 in spite of a recent bailout of $150 billion.
The Spanish yields were not favorably influenced by the bailout action, that's clear. I don't know what the extent of losses and deposits in the Spanish banks is at the moment, but it would be fairly easy to find out.
And the Austrian finance minister, Maria Fechter, on Monday refused to rule out that Italy may need an EU rescue money in the coming months, prompting Italy's Prime Minister, Mario Monti, to call her remarks completely inappropriate. What do you know about what's happening in Italy? Is that another shoe that's going to drop?
Well, shoes can drop in this situation quite readily as investors decide that they have opportunities. So you have a situation in which it doesn't matter what the political situation is in the country or what the underlying economic situation is. You don't need bad news. You simply need a sense that there's going to be a movement against a country's position, then, of course, investors are going to move, speculators are going to move to take advantage of that.
So what is then, again, to that central question of who gets their hands around it? Who creates a firewall? I mean, there's some creation of some new European banking. There's the European Financial Stability Facility, and there's a new fund called the European Stability Mechanism. But nobody seems to think that at the end of the day, these are they seem to think these are Band-Aids. And at the end of the day, it really comes down to Angela Merkel and whether or not she's can rise above being a politician and become a statesman and make some bold move. I imagine the White House has been begging her to do something for probably the last year. President Obama's fate, in many ways, is in her hands in terms of his re-election. What's your understanding of pressure on Merkel and whether she's likely to step up to the plate?
Well, I think Angela Merkel is a very capable German politician, and that she is very unlikely to do anything that would jeopardize her future as Chancellor of Germany. And that means that she's not going to be terribly open to making any obvious move under, let's say, the pressure from the U.S. Treasury, which has its own concerns in the matter. But those are not... unless the U.S. has some way to turn them into a political concern for Chancellor Merkel, I don't see why that would be very high on her list.
Well, but the Germans have clearly been the beneficiaries of the euro, and they're being somewhat fair with the friends, aren't they? They're not basically the average German voter thinks that it's about the problem is because of a bunch of lazy Greeks and Italians and Spaniards who don't pay their taxes.
This is why Greece is being sacrificed, and this is in many ways this is a thoroughly reprehensible policy. You have the principle of collective responsibility being applied to a small country of 11 million people, a country whose institutions were never very strong to begin with, and they are being effectively destroyed in this process, under terms that are at best hypocritical. But I think even now the hypocrisy has gone out of it. This is purely a case of a punishment inflicted in order to cater to the political pressures in Germany. And that punishment consists of destroying the education system, destroying the hospital system, destroying the transport system, basically undoing the core institutions of Greece, which, of course, is not going to attract foreign investors. And that is why the Greek public has quite rightly come to the conclusion, a very large part of it has come to the conclusion, this is not a policy mix that they should accept. And we're likely to see... We don't know exactly how the Greek elections next Sunday are going to come out, but it's very likely that the Greek public will express itself on this subject.
Again, I'm speaking with James Galbraith, who is a professor at the Lyndon B. Johnson School of Public Policy at the University of Texas in Austin. He's also a senior scholar of the Levy Economics Institute and serves as chair of the Board of Economists for Peace and Security. And his latest book is Inequality and Instability. I mean, the Greek people are being punished and the Spanish people are being punished. Young Spaniards, the 50% unemployed, over 50% of them are unemployed. The question seems to be, though, here that if they're indeed these borrowers are irresponsible, in the case of Spain, I understand a lot of it was a housing bubble created by demand from Germans who wanted to buy extra homes in summer homes in Spain. But the long and the short of it is the lenders, irresponsible or not, are being the borrowers, irresponsible or not, are being punished, and the lenders, largely in the case of Spain, and I think also in the case of Greece, are German banks. They're not being punished. Is that what's going on?
Well, the populations of the borrowing countries are being punished. They are not necessarily borrowers in any personal sense. And you've got to remember, too, that while everybody says Greece was the one case of a public sector fiscal crisis, that crisis was, some part of it was the funding of let's say the construction projects associated with the Olympics, the construction project associated with the Athens Metro. This was not done by Greek engineering firms. The contracts and so forth, and a great part of them came from Northern Europe. And there's also the fact that Greece has a very substantial military budget, which has a large procurement element, which includes battle tanks and submarines that come from, guess where, Germany. So it's not the case that even the debts of the Greek state are entirely due to, let's say, profligate consumption expenditures by by ordinary Greek citizens. It's, in fact, very far from the case.
So at the end of the day, though, James Galbraith, it seems that what's going on here is that these countries in trouble in Europe, they're borrowing more money, but they're not doing anything about growth. And that is that the central problem here, that we've had austerity?
Growth is kind of a very easy thing to call for, but the word covers a great many sins and a great many policy prescriptions, many of which are purely chimerical. That is to say, to be for growth in political terms, to be for whatever it was you were for anyway. And there is no easy formula by which you can return the Eurozone as a whole to growth under current conditions. So you have to deal with the fact that you have a banking crisis your immediate threat is that the payment system is going to come unglued. Simon Johnson, the former IMF chief economist, had a very interesting piece a few days ago. She said that one of the ways this is going to unravel is, in addition to the capital flight issue, that private citizens will simply cease making payments in euro in anticipation of their debts being converted back to another currency. And so this will start happening perhaps in Greece or Spain. I think Germany wants to prevent the exit from the Eurozone of any such country. It probably can do so, and it's certainly very much in Germany's interest to do so. So long as there isn't really decisive change in policy, you do have the fact that private economic actors have ways to protect themselves and to reduce their exposure, and they will be increasingly taking those ways. And ultimately, if there are no jobs available, it's not going to be solved by growth, but it's going to be solved by people leaving those countries to the extent they can. Greece is a small place. The professional class of Greece is quite small. It has a large diaspora in the United States and Australia, and you can bet that people are making plans to move if they have the capacity.
But James Galbraith, at this point, it seems that what's happening is that the banks are being bailed out, but not the economies, and that there's been this pattern that I've alluded to and I've been discussing for the last couple of years here, that it all comes down to doing too little too late. Do you, again, going back to the question about the bold move, is there going to be one?
No, I don't think there will be. I think in the nature of it, the requirement on Chancellor Merkel's government is that they do that which is necessary to preserve the Eurozone as a whole and that which is necessary to preserve the German banks. And they have the power to do that, certainly, but the price of the machinations required to achieve that is that they, as I say, in a very cynical and rather brutal way, dismantle a member of the European community, in particular Greece, and impose stagnation and increasingly socially intolerable conditions on some of the others, notably Spain, also Ireland for that matter, but that's also a very small country. The countries which are in a position to object forcefully and effectively to this line of policy have not yet done so. And they are, first of all, Italy, and secondly, France. France is in an ambivalent position, but it does have a new president and a new political mood. Italy is a country which, as you noted, is open to speculative attack and may ultimately start to develop a Mediterranean politics that begins to argue forcefully for a change in the European picture. And Italy is large enough to make that case in the councils of Europe in some way that really can't be ignored.
Well, the George Soros recently said that what we're witnessing in the Eurozone is an emergence of a new German empire, I guess an allusion to what Germany failed to do militarily in the early 1940s, they managed to do economically in 2012.
Well, it might as well be Charlemagne, you know.
Mm-hmm. So what's your response to that notion?
In the nature of this, I don't think Germany will have the last word. Ultimately, I mean, even if the governments of the peripheral regions do not and cannot effectively oppose the German policy, their populations will increasingly do so. And that's where the final word on this issue is going to come from.
But the German population has not been educated to the real issues. They've again, it's been racialized between the North-South divide.
That's a very important point. I mean, it's a very effective way of making this case. This is a question which has increasingly been racialized in a very primitive and deplorable way.
And who's going to step up to the plate and stop this and, you know, be
well,
the adult?
Ultimately, if it's going to be stopped, the responsibility to do so will be upon those populations who are being victimized. And they, ultimately, that's, I think, what will have to happen. I don't see that their governments are going to step up for them in advance of their populations putting their feet down and saying no. And you can see some of this developing in Spain. You can certainly see the waves of protests in Greece. And these are not unreasonable protests. People understand that the underlying purposes of the European Union, as they understood it, are being, totally contravened. Policy is abetting a movement in the opposite direction, a movement that allows one part of the union to be enriched while another part becomes, the previously poorer part, becomes even more deeply impoverished. And that is, not something people are going to buy into indefinitely.
Well, just in closing, James Galbraith, the European Commission has recommended a European banking union to oversee all the banking in all 27 EU states. President Obama recently, and I guess it was a way of throwing a bone to Angela Merkel, said it's bad enough for me having to deal with one Congress, but having to deal with 17 has got to be a bit of a nightmare. What are the hopes of this European banking union coming into being? Because obviously they don't have a Federal Reserve like we do. And, you know, the kind of money that's gone out to stabilize the euro is nothing compared to what happened after the crash of 2008 here.
Well, let's talk about that. A banking union would entail a common insurance scheme. And a common insurance scheme must entail a regulatory authority that's capable of closing down banks that are insolvent, which it would quickly be discovered many of them are. That would entail a very major shift of authority, essentially a new unity to the Eurozone and a breaking apart of what have been very tight political relationships between national banking systems and national governments. So that is an interesting proposition, but it is one with very profound, structural implications for the governance of the Eurozone. Should it happen, it would be truly a sign that things are changing very rapidly over here. But it's an enormous mountain. It's not something you can just decree and have come into existence from one day to the next. The whole mechanism of how the thing would run would have to be determined, and then you really have the test of whether the banks that have that are in danger of failing would be shut down by regulators who would not necessarily come from those countries.
Well, I started out by asking about this new word, Eurogloom, and I've ended up feeling somewhat gloomy, James Galbraith. But
I'm sorry I haven't been able to help you on that.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here from Europe.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with James Galbraith, who is a professor at the Lyndon B. Johnson School of Public Policy at the University of Texas in Austin. He's also a senior scholar of the Levy Economics Institute and serves as the chair of the Board of Economists for Peace and Security. His books include Balancing Acts, Technology, Finance, and the American Future, Created Unequal, The Crisis in American Pay, and The Predator State. His latest book is Inequality and Instability. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the Latino vote, the sleeping giant that could determine the 2012 election.
And keep on wishing. Remember your dream is your only scheme, so keep on pushing. Take nothing.